I want to tell you about the most beautiful thing that happened at this cathedral last Thursday night. For a decade in this city, the Jews and the Muslims have come together for one meal a year in order to try to communicate and find peace together. They decided that they would do this each year during the season of Ramadan, the season of fasting for the Muslims. That they would meet at the synagogue, because the Jews, the conservative and Orthodox Jews, have to eat kosher food, which can only be prepared in a kosher kitchen. So the Muslims would come to the synagogue and they would have an iftar dinner, the dinner that breaks the fast at the end of the day during the season of Ramadan. And they did this for 10 years, until this year, when things were so torn up in the Middle East. And of course, on Thursday, we didn't know that America would be bombing Iran. Because of all the war and violence in the Middle East, the Muslims no longer felt safe going to the synagogue for the meal. But they still wanted to have this meal. They recognized how important it was. So they called me and they asked if they could host this iftar meal at the cathedral. I felt honored, and I spoke to the vestry, who also felt that this was a great honor to host them. We couldn't publicize it because we didn't want anyone picketing or any danger, and we hired cops to be around the campus, and a few select volunteers from this cathedral wore Love at the Core t-shirts or purple t-shirts with a cathedral sign on, and they spent the whole evening welcoming, helping everyone find their way around this maze. You know, we have 9 doors, right? So this sanctuary was filled with Muslims and Jews, and they asked me to describe to them about the sanctuary. So I told them about how we're in the shape of a cross and we face east, and how it looks like a boat because we sail into the kingdom of heaven. And then we had a speaker. Her name is Megan Phelps Roper, and she has written a book called Unfollow. Megan Phelps Roper is from the Westboro Baptist Church. How many people have heard of the Westboro Baptist Church? They are an extremist, fundamentalist, right-wing church based out of Topeka, Kansas. They're known fairly widely because they picket AIDS funerals, because they have hateful signs. And I know them well because I was a rector of a church in Wichita, Kansas for 7 years. And when we consecrated our first gay bishop, for a few months they would picket outside of my church with signs that said, "Reverend Moorhead is a witch," and things like that. Their signs were really hateful. Sometimes my acolytes would cry. Things like, "Gays are going to hell," "Jews, you're going to burn," horrible things. So Megan Phelps Roper was part of this church, and not only part of this church, but it's really one big family. It's kind of crazy. So she grew up indoctrinated by all this stuff and believing it firmly. And her favorite thing in her early 20s was to get on Twitter and throw hate tweets. Then something happened to her. She was in her mid-20s, and a young Jewish man named David started tweeting her back. She would throw hate at him, and he would just reply saying, "I'd like to get to know you better." She'd say, "You're going to hell," and he'd say, "Well, I hope not." When she said she was coming to picket near where he lived, he said, "How about we meet for coffee?" And no matter how much hate she spewed at him, he never stopped communicating with her. So she had coffee with him, and something began to shift inside of her because she realized she liked him. And then she realized maybe he wasn't going to hell. And then he introduced her to some of his friends who were gay, and it really shook her up. And her world started to crack because it was a fragile world. Everything started to fall apart. She could no longer reason her way towards being a part of this church. She realized that they were not actually doing what Jesus talked about, loving your enemies. All they were doing was hating everybody. And eventually she left. And when she left, she was completely blocked off from her whole family. And all of this happened, all this transformation happened inside of her because one man was willing to have a conversation with her. Despite the fact that she kept insulting him and hating him, he kept on talking to her. And it was in that conversation that she began to change. You see, hate doesn't do that. If we just keep hating people who hate us, nothing changes. But what that young Jewish man did was something much greater. He talked to her. He may not have liked her, but he talked to her. You know, we Christians, we always hate the Pharisees. They're easy to hate. They're such jerks. Jesus calls them snakes. And you know, they were the ones that really wanted to crucify Jesus, so it's easy to hate them. But today I want us to think more deeply about who they really were. The word Pharisee means separate one. Think with me for a minute about what it would have been like to grow up Jewish in Jesus' time. This was Roman-occupied territory. They were not free. They would walk the streets and there were soldiers everywhere. They could beat you up. They could tax you for no reason. You couldn't travel without getting permission. Every Jewish man was living a life that was not within his control. And the women, well, they had no control. So what did they do? Many Jewish men began to focus on the Torah, the law. It was something that they could control, and they felt like if they could practice the law perfectly, then God would send the Messiah and rescue them from all this mess. If they just got it perfectly right, what you're to eat, what you're to wear, how to wash your hands, it got obsessive. But at least it was something they could control and hold on to. The Pharisee Nicodemus that we hear about in the Gospel was one of the Sanhedrin, which is like the Supreme Court of the Jews of that time. There were 70 of them. Nicodemus would have been trained from an early boy in the law. He would have been taught how to read Hebrew. He would have apprenticed with a rabbi, then been similar to law school. He would have first been on a small court of about 23 men and then moved up. And by the time he got to the Sanhedrin, he would have been old and wise and well-versed in everything about the scripture, and he would have devoted his whole life to it, to perfecting it, to honing it, to making sure that everything was precise and clean and right so that the Messiah would come. And then Jesus shows up. And he doesn't follow all the laws. He heals on the Sabbath. And most of the Pharisees, they just hated him. He didn't fit. He wasn't right. But Nicodemus listened and looked. So he takes off all of his fancy robes, and one night he sneaks over and finds Jesus, and they have a conversation. That's all it was. Nicodemus talking with Jesus. And when you hear the conversation, it's a really funny one, because Jesus is trying to explain about being born of the Spirit, and Nicodemus is so literal that he goes, well, how could a baby go back into its mother's womb and be born again? He doesn't understand. He's so analytical. And Jesus keeps talking to him, though, and he keeps trying to understand. And they sort of pass like ships in the night, Nicodemus not comprehending anything Jesus said. And yet, this conversation changes Nicodemus. Because chapters later, when the Pharisees are trying to condemn Jesus, Nicodemus will argue with him and defend him. He will say to his brother Pharisees, you may not be right about this man. You should be careful. He may be of God. And the conversation that Nicodemus had with Jesus continues to change him, because by the time Jesus dies on the cross, Nicodemus is willing to step out in public. And in front of everyone, he takes Jesus' body and he spends all this money on spices. And together with Joseph of Arimathea, he buries Jesus like a nobleman. Sometimes we have conversations with people and they don't hear a word we say, but yet something is planted, a seed is planted, and they begin to listen. They begin to change. So it's so important that we have these conversations with people who disagree with us or even offend us. And the most important conversation that I hope you're having and never stop having is with God. And speaking of conversations with God, yesterday, my good husband took Pistachio, our cat, or I like to call her Mrs. P, to get her shots. So Chris and Pistachio had a conversation the whole way there. Pistachio did not like being put in the crate. She is talkative, and she was telling Chris, "Row, row, row, row. This is too crowded. I don't like this. Why are you taking me away from my house?" And Chris kept saying, "It's okay. It's going to be okay." And she yelled at him the whole way to the vet. And then, as they took her out and gave her the shot, she yelled louder and was mad. "Row, row, row, row." She really does know how to meow. And Chris kept saying, "It's okay, Mrs. P. It really is okay. Everything's going to be all right." And then on the way home, scolding and yapping at him with her meows all the way home till we got home. And then she got out of the crate and jumped out and yelled at us one more time. And we gave her a treat. But sometimes our conversation with God is like that. We're saying, "Why are you doing this to me? I don't like the situation I'm in. What's going on here? Ow, that hurt. What are you doing to me, God? I don't like this." And God is saying, "It's okay. It's going to be all right. I really do love you. You don't understand why you're going through this. I get it. It's not fun. But I do know what I'm doing. Just trust me. I've got your best interests in mind. I really do love you. going to be okay. It's going to be okay. On Thursday night, we ended with the dinner in Tolliver Hall. I got to sit up on the dais with the rabbi and the imam and answer some questions. This old imam looked at me and he said, "You know, maybe the world would be better if we let women lead a bit more." And I look, and I looked out over the people eating together, and we had asked people to sit with someone who's of another faith, ask them about their faith. And it was so beautiful to see them sitting with each other, talking about, how do you pray 5 times a day? Do you get up and down that much? Why do you separate the meat from the milk? It was like a vision of the kingdom, with our people waiting on the tables and asking them if they had enough water. And they were talking. That's all. They were just talking. So keep talking to each other, to other people, and most importantly, keep talking to God. Amen.